We'll hear argument now, number 95-2031, Thomas Young versus Kirk Fordyce. Ms. Wright?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, this case arises because the state of Mississippi, since early 1995, has been conducting voter registration under procedures that have not been submitted for preclearance to the United States Attorney General or to the D.C. District Court, as required by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Because the Section 5 preclearance requirement is so critical in protecting the right to vote in states such as Mississippi, Congress expressly provided in the National Voter Registration Act of 1993, the NVRA, that states must comply with the Voting Rights Act in implementing the NVRA. Now, the procedures that Mississippi ultimately decided upon in implementing the NVRA established a two-tier or dual system under which citizens who register under the provisions of the NVRA must also register separately to be able to vote in state elections. And a plan that implements the NVRA through that type of dual system reflects a change from the voter registration system that Mississippi had in effect prior to 1990.
May I ask you a question right here about that? Suppose from the outset Mississippi had said, we're not going to change our state and local registration system from what it's been. We're going to keep it. But here are the changes we're offering to implement for federal election purposes, the MVRA. Could the Department of Justice refuse to pre-clear such a scheme if Mississippi kept in place its state local registration scheme and had a proposal that met the statutory requirements for the MVRA?
Yes, it could, Your Honor. If the procedures that the state adopted were found by the Attorney General or the D.C. District Court to be discriminatory in purpose or effect, that objection could be made.
And even in the face of the fact that the NVRA requirements expressly state that they govern only federal elections.
Well, Your Honor, in this
there seems to be some indication in the statute itself that it never, Congress never purported to require a change in requirements for state and local elections.
It doesn't require that. That is true. It leaves that decision up to the state.
But you think that the Attorney General can make that a condition of any approval?
Well, it depends in part upon the state-specific history and the practices that it has.
In any Section 5 state, you think the Attorney General can insist on that?
Mississippi had a unitary system by statute at the time the NVRA came into effect, and we contend that the implementation of a dual system reflects a change from that unitary
system. It still does have the same unitary system in place. You can still register for both federal and state elections the same way you could before the MVR provision.
But you have a...
Now you have an additional option. If you want to use the easier method, you can register for federal elections. But as far as what a citizen of Mississippi can do by way of registering for both state and federal, it is exactly the same as it was before, isn't it?
Well, our contention
except
is
for the
that
false
it's...
start. Let's leave the false start out of the mix for the moment.
Leaving the false start out of it, you now have a system under which there is a class of citizens that once registered is not permitted to vote in state and local elections, and that is not a unitary system under any meaningful sense
by,
of the term.
By reason of the special grace provided by the federal statute. But the same system that existed for multiple registration prior to the MVRA is still in place in Mississippi.
There was no system of multiple registration, though, because one registration made you eligible for all purposes.
Well,
and the real purpose of our lawsuit here is to say that whatever choices Mississippi made in implementing the NVRA, whatever plan it decided to adopt, ultimately had to be submitted for preclearance so that the Attorney General could review exactly how that procedure was going to be implemented. And there are many, many discretionary choices that a state makes in deciding to set up a system either on a dual basis or even if it's on a dual basis. There are different ways and different choices that a state makes that will have a major impact on whether the voters...
Give me a few illustrations of that. One is
which
state offices will be used for registration. I take it that's one.
That's right. And also, for example, the registration forms themselves. in the NVRA forms that are currently in effect and that are being handed out at these state agencies do not say anything about limited registration. You have forms, for example, that are being handed out at the public assistance agencies that are entitled Mississippi Voter Registration Application. And nothing on the form tells you that when you fill that out, you're only going to be eligible to vote in state and local elections. So it was vital for the Attorney General.
In federal?
You mean only vote in federal elections?
That you would only be able to vote in federal elections, that's correct. And so it was vital because of the risk of confusion and the risk of people believing that they may already be registered for all purposes when in fact they are not, that the Attorney General review these procedures,
I can understand that, but to ask the further question whether the Attorney General, assuming the forms make it clear that it's only for registration for federal elections, as the law indeed says is necessary, whether it can go beyond that and say, moreover, state, you have to make this a unitary system now and follow the federal plan for all, even state and local.
But if there were evidence before the D.C. District Court or the Attorney General that a dual system had been reinstated for the very purpose of discriminating against minority citizens,
not
certainly
reinstated, kept unchanged from the past, but following the new law for federal elections.
But, Your Honor, the cases such as City of Lockhart versus United States recognize that even when a state maintains certain procedures but changes other aspects of its registration system, the procedures that are unchanged themselves may be subject to Section 5 review.
It just seems so counterintuitive in the face of language in the statute whereby Congress expresses the intent not to require a change for state and local registration purposes. That's the troublesome part of this case for me, anyway.
But cases such as City of Lockhart recognize, in that case, the numbered post requirement had not been changed at all.
But that wasn't in connection with the Federal Voter Right Registration Act.
No, it was not. But it was a situation where one provision that called for numbered posts remained unchanged, and the court held that it nevertheless was a change when the city applied that numbered post requirement to an election system where additional seats had been added, because the court held that you have to examine a change in the context of the entire election system.
That's fair enough when it's voluntary on the part of the state. Where one change is made voluntarily on the part of the state, you can say, well, the whole thing gets sucked in. But this is a unique situation in which a certain change is imposed upon the state by the federal government. Now, it's one thing to say that the way in which you implement that mandatory change must be cleared with the Attorney General. That's one thing. But it's quite something else to say that because the federal government has mandated this change, all of your current system, which you have not changed at all, has to be resubmitted for clearance to the Attorney General.
But, Your Honor, the Attorney General is entitled to examine the effect that this particular method of implementation will have on voting and registration in state and local elections.
Whatever its effect is the fault of the federal government, so long as the procedures for implementing the federal scheme themselves are fair.
Well,
it may discourage people from voting in state elections who find it easier to register for federal only. But that's the Congress's fault for applying this system only to federal elections.
We argue, Your Honor, that because of the decision in Allen versus State Board of Elections, it's clear that even if a particular change is mandated by the Voting Rights Act itself, it is subject to the clearance requirement.
Your argument goes considerably further than Allen, which itself went, to me, to the extreme of construing this statute.
May I ask, Ms. Wright, I just want to be sure. I didn't think the questions that Justice O'Connor put to you as presented by this case. We aren't concerned with whether or not the Attorney General would have had a duty to pre-clear if there had been a submission, are we?
No, that question will arise when and if the procedures
yes,
of the state actually...
For all we know, the Attorney General would just routinely pre-clear it.
Well,
or perhaps he'd act wrongfully if she refused to, but that's not before us, is it?
The question of actual discriminatory intent or effect is not before this court, and it was not before the court below. And that is why we contend that the court exceeded its jurisdiction.
Is it not true that even if it's perfectly clear that the Attorney General would have had a duty to pre-clear the existing system, you would nevertheless prevail?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. Yes. I'm simply trying
to... Are you actually asking as well to submit all the changes that weren't made? I thought what you were asking for is that what has to be submitted, the manner in which they carried out the changes required by the voter registration, the Motor Voter Act, and that will be judged against a background in which they didn't change the state officials.
Well, we
but I don't understand. I agree. I don't understand why they'd have to submit the things they didn't change. I suppose they'd have to submit the things they did change. And then you would argue that those changes are unlawful because of the...
That's right. That's right. We contend that the procedures establishing a dual system, all of them, need to be submitted for preclearance.
But isn't all that premature? I thought the simple point is there's been a change. Every change has to be precleared, period. Now, the Attorney General may agree with your broad view or disagree. We don't know that at this point. All we know is that we have a change prompted by the federal law. Everybody concedes that it is a change that needs to be pre-cleared. Why should we look at anything more than that
in
this case?
We certainly agree that there is no necessity of determining what the ultimate outcome of the...
Or even what constitutes a satisfactory submission. That's for the Attorney General to decide in the first instance.
Yes.
But it might be important to other members of this court to know just how far the Attorney General's position goes. It certainly is important to me.
And in that respect,
Your Honor.
May I rephrase Justice O'Connor's question? It isn't your position that as a practical matter, the state must ask for preclearance of its former voting procedures.
It need not submit those procedures, but we do believe that if the state is going to change from its current statutory policy of a unitary system, it does need to obtain preclearance for that alteration of its important policy.
So you are saying that as a practical matter, the state cannot leave in place its previous pre-cleared procedures without further amendment and alteration of those procedures.
Because its but that's only because its current system contemplates a unitary system of registration. And I do want to emphasize the very narrow character of the inquiry that we have here. The only inquiry is whether there has been a change and whether, if there has been a change, that change has been submitted to the Attorney
General. Even though the change was brought about by the federal government.
That's right.
Not by the state. None of our cases support that, do they?
I believe Allen versus the State Board of Elections and McDaniel versus...
Was that change brought about by the federal government?
Yes, it was an implementation of the Voting Rights Act. Virginia was implementing the Voting Rights Act by providing assistance to illiterate voters. And the Allen case held that the changes providing that those that assistance had to be given was subject to the preclearance requirement of Section 5. And the reason for that is that...
That's not what we're arguing about here. It's not whether the procedures for implementing the federal act have to be cleared, but whether there get sucked along with that the procedures that the state has had in place for many years for registering under the state laws.
Well, we contend
and
that
was not involved in any earlier case.
That comes into play, though, because of Mississippi's clear statutory policy of having a unitary registration system.
Well, you pick on that and you say that that has been changed. Well, I mean, yes, you can say that that's been changed. You could also say, however, if they had changed it to a unitary or had continued a unitary, you could also say there has been a change, because it used to be that you had to, in order to register for the state, do things beyond what the Motor Vehicle Registration Act requires.
Well, we do argue.
That's a loaded question. You say you focus on this unitary as though that's the center of the universe. I don't know why.
Well, what we argue, Your Honor, is that the state has been highly selective in deciding which provisions of existing Mississippi law it must continue to comply with and which it cannot change. We believe that the important state policy of a unitary registration system is clearly far greater in importance to the state than the provision of an attesting witness requirement in a mail-in form, which is really the only provision here that Mississippi has identified as a bar to implementing the registration
procedures
on a unitary basis.
If you asked me what would constitute the least change that Mississippi could make in order to comply with the federal law, I would say it is precisely what Mississippi did here. Leave its current registration procedures entirely in place. If you want to register for state and federal elections at the same time, you just follow what Mississippi has had in place for years. And add to that what the federal government has required to be added, motor vehicle registration for federal elections. That seems to me a minimal change possible in the state system.
We would argue from the perspective of the voters, it certainly is not the least change possible, because if you think about Election Day, the registrars are now required to keep two sets of poll books, one for NVRA registrants only allowed to vote in federal elections and one for other registrants. Presumably, if you go into the voting booth, you have to get a separate ballot. Because if there are both federal and state elections on the ballot, you can't be permitted to vote that ballot. And so these types of changes, these types of...
No problem. Just register under the state procedures, and you don't have to worry about that.
But, Your Honor...
Just the way it was before.
But because the NVRA does require that states administer these procedures, the state, we contend, has an obligation to identify exactly how it wants to go about implementing the NVRA and obtain preclearance for all of those decisions specifically spelled out in a proceeding either before the Attorney General of the United States or the D.C. District Court, and that is what has not happened here. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Well, may I ask you a fact question? I thought it had happened in the sense that the procedures that were outlined in the original submission for the application of the new federal act are in fact the ones that are being followed. I thought the contention was that the changes in the old state procedures which were outlined in that submission were not followed. Am I wrong as a matter of fact?
Well, we are arguing that the system that was submitted to the Attorney General by the Secretary of State in December of 1994 was a system that contemplated a unitary set of procedures.
Oh, I realize that if you take the totality of the submission, that totality, in fact, has not been followed.
That's right.
The provisions of that totality have not been followed.
That's right.
But with respect to the provisions for the implementation of the Federal Act, have they been followed or not?
We believe that Mississippi is following the provisions as they respect federal elections.
Okay, so the only fact difference then is it didn't make changes to conform its old state system to the new procedures which everybody agrees it's following for the limited federal registration.
But there are further differences because of it. By necessity, when you implement a dual system, you have to make changes in your practices to take into account the fact that you now have two separate sets of registration requirements that may result in confusion for voters. So we say that as a package, the decision to implement these procedures on a federal election-only basis really need to be submitted and reviewed on that basis.
I just wanted to ask about your benchmark view. If the interim January to February 10th, if that was not the system that Mississippi ever lawfully adopted, then why shouldn't our only benchmark be what was before the Federal Act became effective?
Well, we contend that it's not necessary to determine the status of those early 1995 procedures in order to dispose of this case, but we do contend that Mississippi was actually implementing a unitary NVRA plan and that it could not make a change from that system that was in effect in the early part of 1995.
An unlawful system, they couldn't just treat that as a nullity and say we had a pre-January 1 system and a lawful post January 1 system?
We contend no, because you simply cannot treat as a nullity the registration of thousands of voters who registered under the assumption that they were eligible for all elections. That would be...
Why not just give them notice? Just give them notice that what they registered for counts only for the federal election.
Preclearance would have to be obtained for a change that makes such a dramatic difference in the registration status of so many voters. That's part of our contention.
As I understood your submission, it is not that the whole state was acting de facto this way, although unlawfully. It's that only a certain number of counties were. I don't know how you can possibly leap to the position that the entire state of Mississippi, which is what is at issue here, that the entire state of Mississippi was de facto operating under a unitary system.
Well, we contend that even though only some of the circuit clerks put voters actually on the rolls for all purposes, the unitary NVRA plan was actually being implemented on a statewide basis, because in each of these counties, when you went into the agencies, the forms that you were being given and the procedures that were being followed were, to the knowledge of the voters, procedures registering you for all elections. And that was going on in every county, regardless of whether the circuit clerks immediately put you on the rolls for all purposes. And that's how we say there was, in fact, statewide implementation here. I'd like to reserve.
Very well, Ms. Wright. Mr. Stewart?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the point I'd like to stress from the outset is that the potential discriminatory effects of Mississippi's current system, with which the Department of Justice is most concerned, are not in any sense the product of federal compulsion. That is, the NVRA does require the states to take certain steps, but it leaves the states with substantial discretion in other respects, not only as to the initial decision as to whether NVRA registrants will be entitled to vote in state and local elections, but also with respect to subsidiary decisions regarding the forms that will be used, the procedures by which people will be registered. And I want to emphasize as well that we think we are not being fanciful or alarmist in suggesting there may be a substantial problem with telling thousands of people in Mississippi that they are registered to vote in Mississippi when in fact they are not eligible to cast ballots for any Mississippi official. The question of what forms are being used, what process of notification is given to NVRA registrants is not simply a technicality. It really goes, potentially at least, goes to the heart of whether Mississippi's current system
is... Well, even if we agree that the state's proposals to administratively and by state law implement the requirements of the new federal act have to be submitted to the Attorney General for preclearance, do you also take the position espoused by Ms. Wright that the Attorney General may require the state to go to the same system for its state and local voter requirements?
If the state had made clear from the outset that it intended to implement the NVRA on a federal election-only basis, it would then have submitted the procedures for...
Well, the procedures it did submit to the Attorney General contained within them a proposal for changing state law to go to a system that would be the same for federal as well as state. But I thought the Attorney General's own requirements and that of federal law in this area did not permit the Attorney General to act on something on the basis of laws that had not been passed.
That's correct. The Attorney General did not.
So the Attorney General, instead of acting on this, should have just said, we can't act on it at this stage.
Well, the submission.
Shouldn't it?
No, I don't believe so.
No, that's what the federal law requires. Well, they don't have to do that?
The Attorney General certainly could not appropriately have purported to preclear legislation that had not
but
been
that's
passed.
That's what it purported to do?
I, with respect, Your Honor, I don't believe that's the case.
I was surprised it dealt with it at all. I would think the normal thing would be to send it back to the state and say, this law hasn't passed. We're not in a position to act on it till it does.
But the submission did include the draft legislation, but it also included procedures for implementing the NVRA beginning on January 1st, 1995. And in our view, the unmistakable tenor of the whole submission was that those procedures presupposed a regime in which NVRA registrants would be eligible for state and local elections as well.
Of course it did, but it also quite clearly and on its very face presupposed a new statute that hadn't been passed.
The statute was included, but the submissions did not make clear that passage of the statute was essential to treatment of NVRA registrants.
You're not contending that the Attorney General wouldn't have known from the submission that the statute had not, in fact, been passed?
We knew from the submission that the statute had not been passed. We didn't know from the submission that passage of the statute was a prerequisite to treatment of NVRA registrants as eligible to vote in state and local elections.
Could that not be?
Well,
when you had state law that said this is how you register for state
Well, one of the respects in which this record is fairly hazy is...
You don't have to be a very good lawyer to figure that out. You have state law that says this is how you register for state elections.
In fact, Mississippi has never identified with any clarity the precise state statute which is supposed to bar the treatment of NVRA registrants as eligible to vote in state and local elections. There is no state statute which says of voter registration application...
One that bars it, you need one that authorizes it. People don't get the ability to vote unless there's a law that says they don't have it. They need a law that says they do have it. And the only law in effect was one that said this is how you get to vote in Mississippi. And then you get this submission from Mississippi which says we're now going to let people vote in state elections on the basis of this new federal law. And you see that in the Mississippi statutes, you get this from the Secretary of State, right?
That's correct.
And you see the Mississippi statutes doesn't permit this. I cannot imagine that you people at the Justice Department did not know that this thing required legislation which had not yet been passed.
No, what we knew was that the state had begun to adopt the plan outlined in the submission as of January 1st, 1995. And again, this is not a situation in which the state could decide at a later date what elections these people were registered for. It's essential that a person who comes in to register be told what elections he's eligible to vote in. So it wouldn't have been appropriate at all for the state to tell people you're eligible to vote in all elections and then decide at a later date after the fate of the legislation was determined whether in fact that would be the case. To return for a second to Justice O'Connor's question, I think if Mississippi had told us from the outset, we plan to do this for federal elections only, the Attorney General in deciding whether to issue preclearance would have had to decide first whether there was a discriminatory purpose. But leaving that aside, the Attorney General would have had to determine whether the overall system contemplated would leave minority voters in a worse position than they were before the passage of the NVRA. And in making that determination, the Attorney General could properly consider the likely ancillary effects on voting in state and local elections.
Well, that certainly isn't clear from the language of the act that Congress passed, which seemed to leave in place, if states chose, their existing system for state and local elections. I thought that was pretty clear from the face of the law.
Again, we acknowledge that the NVRA itself does not require these procedures to be used in state and local elections, and we're not arguing that the Attorney General has some blanket authority to require that as a matter of her own discretion. What we're saying...
Well, I thought that was what Ms. Wright argued, and I thought you were arguing in support of her.
I don't understand that to be Ms. Wright's position, and it certainly isn't ours. I think our position is that in determining whether minorities will be worse off after Mississippi implements the NVRA, the Attorney General could consider not only the likely advantages to minority voters of expedited registration procedures in federal elections, she could also consider whether the methods by which Mississippi was registering NVRA voters would be likely to confuse them and thereby dissuade them from...
So there is a significant possibility that Mississippi cannot implement the motor voter MRV statute without also changing pre-cleared, pre-existing procedures for election. For state election.
I would say a theoretical possibility, but I think Mississippi...
I think it's a significant possibility based upon the comment that and the explanation you've just given us.
Well, at least our primary concern at this point is that the method by which Mississippi is implementing the NVRA creates a particular risk that NVRA registrants will be dissuaded from registering separately for state and local elections because the forms on their face give the message that the registrant is eligible to vote in all elections.
Well, the way to cure that is simply to deny the preclearance with respect to the simple implementation of the federal act. That doesn't require you to go any further than that.
Again, all we want at this...
Isn't that so?
Yes, I think that is so. All we want at this point is the opportunity to view the submission and to determine whether there are any likely discriminatory consequences. And with respect to the consequence that I've just outlined, the possibility for confusion based upon the forms and procedures, it certainly would be a sufficient response for Mississippi to reformulate those forms and procedures so that the likelihood of confusion is diminished or eliminated.
What would be the position of the state of Mississippi if you failed to pre-clear its implementation of the new federal statute?
Well, part of this...
Could elections at the state and local level proceed, but not the federal level?
I think part of this depends upon the benchmark that would be used. If as we've contended, the state initially implemented a unitary system of NVRA registration and then sought to change that system, the appropriate remedy pending submission of a new package of materials would be that NVRA registrants would be eligible to vote in all elections until a change had been submitted and pre-cleared. This court has recognized often that the question of whether unlawful election should be set aside is distinct from the question of whether there's been a violation of Section 5. So we certainly don't think that the consequence of requiring a new preclearance submission would necessarily or even probably be that any elections would be set aside.
Is it your position that in a picture like this, the state would be required to preclear twice? Suppose Mississippi took the position, we haven't yet gotten this legislation, we don't know if we will. Could they have let January 1st come and go without filing anything on an interim basis and then waited till they found out what happened with the legislation?
They could have as far as Section 5 is concerned, but not as far as the NVRA is concerned, they would have been required to implement the statute for federal elections because of the effective date of the NVRA itself, and Section 5 would have precluded their doing so without preclearance.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Mr. Sanders, we'll hear from you. Excuse me.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I would like to begin by responding to Justice O'Connor's first question, that being whether base implementation by a state of the requirements of the National Voter Registration Act are subject to Section 5 preclearance, and I think the answer to that question clearly is no. When the Congress mandates that a state implement the matter set forth in the National Voter Registration Act, the state has no discretion about whether to do that. If the Attorney General is asserting a right of review, that means necessarily that the Attorney General is asserting a right to object to Mississippi's implementation of the congressional mandate.
Does that mean that there were no discretionary matters that the state could decide in implementing the Motor Vehicle Registration Act?
No, Your Honor. There are a couple of areas where the state has a very small amount of discretion.
Well, with respect to those, was there a duty to preclear?
Possibly the...
Well, yes or no?
Well, all right. I'll say yes if the amount of discretion is considered to be significant. The NVRA...
Isn't the standard just whether it's a change?
Well, to the extent that the state of Mississippi has discretion in implementing the mandates of the NVRA, arguably those discretionary choices are subject to preclearance.
But and they were not.
Oh, yes, they were, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Let me ask you this. Is it your position that there was no duty to preclear or that you did get preclearance?
Well, on parts of it, there was no duty. On those parts that are strictly mandatory, for instance, putting NVRA forms at driver's license stations, there is no discretion about that. The Congress says thou shalt do that, and we have no discretion there, and the Attorney General may not veto that part or object under the Section 5 device. The Congress also said that you shall put these NVRA forms at certain agencies that provide public assistance. It left it up to the states to determine which agencies fit that description. We made a designation of five or six agencies, and arguably
Was that designation something you had to preclear?
Yes, sir, and it was preclear. That was.
But it wasn't under your view. If I understood your brief, you said that a certain state official did a rogue act, that the December 20th submission was without any authority, that Ms. Slaughter Harvey acted on her own without authority, without anybody in Mississippi approving that. So if one takes that characterization of it, it is as though the December 20th submission never happened. It was totally unauthorized. It was not Mississippi's submission. And if that's the case, then mustn't there be a legitimate preclearance application?
Well, we characterize her actions as both erroneous and partly as a rogue official. The reference to a rogue official was more for illustration. Her action was erroneous primarily to the extent that she purported to submit material that required legislative change.
But I thought you said nobody knew of her December 20th letter.
No one did. Under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, any responsible state official may make a submission. To the extent that she submitted things that were administratively changed, as Justice Stevens asked about, those were legitimate submissions. Anything beyond that, anything that she purported to submit that required legislative preclearance or legislative change, simply were not. They were
Well, I thought they indicated on their face that these are legislative proposals that will be submitted, but they haven't been adopted.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that was clear on the face. But do you take the position that the Attorney General can't pre-clear the contents of the materials that are handed to people to register for federal elections so that it is clear to those people that they will be registered only for federal purposes and not state?
All right, let me make
I would think that would be a natural part
of
pre-clearance.
Those purported changes that required legislative action we submit were not properly pre-cleared. They cannot be submitted for pre-clearance. Those actions...
I'm talking about the materials submitted to the people who come in to get a driver's
license. Right, such as an NVRA form.
Language used to explain to the voters in Mississippi the Mississippi position, that you will be registered for federal elections only.
I understand.
And to register for the state, you have to do A, B, C, and D.
Yes, such
now,
as...
Now, presumably, the Attorney General could take objection to Mississippi's apparent failure to advise voters of the situation.
All right. The NVRA form itself, the state has some discretion, arguably, about what to include in that. The Federal Election Commission has the responsibility of setting forth which elements must be contained in the NVRA form. The state of Mississippi may incorporate into that form its own voter disqualification, such as conviction of certain crimes and so forth. The state of Mississippi did that. That form was submitted to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General pre-cleared that form on February.
He pre-cleared it, or purported to pre-clear it, she, as part of a package which included, I mean, in a way, you two sides deserve each other. the Attorney General purports to pre-clear something that was never submitted, and you purport to have gotten pre-cleared something that was never submitted. It was submitted as a whole package.
Yes, Your Honor. That's what the plaintiffs refer to as the context argument, that the context of the submission it was different than the context of the implementation of that which was submitted. There is a very important thing to keep in mind. Section 5 prescribes a 60-day period for reviewing submissions. Section 5 also, by the express language, says that if the Attorney General, within that 60-day period, decides not to object within that 60-day period, but that the Attorney General receives additional information within that 60-day period, the Attorney General may lodge a conditional objection pending an opportunity to review that additional material. Now, the 60-day period began here on December the 20th, 1994. It ended on February the 18th, 1995. The Department of Justice on February the 16th, 1995, 2 days before that 60-day period ended, wrote a letter setting forth that they believe that that what we were doing instituting a dual registration system, but the Attorney General never did anything to diminish the preclearance that she had granted on February the 1st, 1995. It cannot be said that on February the 16th or February the 18th, also the day that the 60-day period ended, it cannot be said that the Attorney General at that point did not understand fully the context of what she pre-cleared on
February
1st.
It can be said, can't it, that what the Attorney General pre-cleared was what you submitted.
That's right.
And what you submitted does not conform to the law or practice of Mississippi today. That's true, isn't it?
Yes. To the extent that the submission included purported changes or proposed changes in statutory law, you're correct.
That's right. And is it further true that you concede, I interpret your remarks this way, correct me if I'm wrong, is it further true that you do concede that Mississippi's discretionary acts in implementing NVRA must be pre-cleared?
And more pre-cleared, yes.
No, just that,
well, yes,
that they must be pre-cleared, must be subject to pre-clearance.
To the extent that they represent significant discretion, they must be pre-cleared. It's like McDaniel versus Sanchez, when the court said that court-imposed election remedies need not be pre-cleared unless there is significant voter jurisdiction input into that plan. It makes that distinction, and I would say the same thing applies here. To the extent that there is significant discretion in Mississippi's input, then it does require preclearance. I'm not certain, however, that the very limited things that we do when we designate which agencies fit the description of public assistance agencies, I'm not sure that that is enough Mississippi input to require those things to be submitted for preclearance. But to the extent that that is enough, they were submitted and they were
pre-cleared. Mr. Sanders, wouldn't the most important thing to preclear, perhaps the only thing, once Mississippi decides it's going to do a different federal-only registration, is to tell people who come into the Motor Vehicle Bureau in big letters, this will register you for federal elections only. And such a thing was never pre-cleared because the first submission didn't suppose there was going to be that system.
Well, of course, the National Voter Registration Act doesn't require that we set forth any such disclaimer or warning. It simply requires that we put certain forms at certain locations, and that's what we did.
It also says that each voter registration agency, the following services shall be made available: assistance to applicants in completing voter registration forms. Now, perhaps assistance to applicants would include an explanation of what's going on.
All right. Yes, Your Honor, I don't quarrel with that. The fact is we are informing people when they come in to register the status that they will attain by virtue of that registration. And I don't think the fact that we now inform people, I don't think the conveyance of information is a change within Section 5 that requires preclearance.
The means by which you do that, however you are informing them, has never been submitted to the Attorney General and has never been pre-cleared, because
yes, Your Honor,
the premise of your first submission was that you wouldn't be telling them that. Isn't that correct?
Well, it just the first submission did not contemplate that at all.
That's right. So that the Attorney General neither had before her nor pre-cleared whatever means you are using to get this information to the voters.
Again,
that's true.
That's true, yes, sir. But I would just contend that the transmission of information helping someone understand his or her voting status is not a change in any event, especially within the meaning of Section 5. I don't think that if a circuit clerk or the Secretary of State wanted to inform someone of what their voting status was, the names of the persons on the ballot or anything else, I don't think that that would require
Section 5
preclearance.
But, Counsel, the adoption of the form that you'd use for the voter to fill out and so forth, that certainly was a change, wasn't it? It's a new form.
Well, it's a new form mandated by the Congress, of course.
Right.
We have
was
very
language. All the language in the form mandated by Congress.
Virtually all of it. The FEC requires or allows us to incorporate into the form those, as I said, those things that would disqualify us.
Isn't it fairly clear that if at the time of your submission you had realized what the ultimate outcome would have been, you would have put on that form, this is good only for federal elections?
Well, of course, if the Mississippi Attorney General's office had known at the time that a submission was about to have been made, a lot of things would have been done differently. The fact is here that the Department of Justice interjected itself into the Mississippi matters. It pressured, I think.
Interject themselves. Congress passed a statute that requires preclearance when you make changes, and you made some changes. You had a duty to get preclearance, so you triggered the preclearance process.
Well, I beg to differ, Your Honor. I believe the Department of Justice triggered this hasty submission. They called and wrote to persons employed with the Secretary of State's office on several occasions, prompting them to go ahead and submit a preclearance.
Sure.
And frankly, I think it was their behavior that caused this false start, as Justice Scalia referred to it as. But it's not the fact that Mississippi has tried to deceive the Department of Justice by any stretch.
It isn't that, but it seems to me that we were off on sort of a tangent about whether they should or should not pre-clear a unitary or system or not. But it seems to me they're a very simple case. Even the most modest changes under the Motor Voter Registration Act needed pre-clearance. They weren't pre-cleared.
Yes, well, Your Honor,
whether they should be pre-cleared is, maybe you're dead right on that. They probably should be.
Well, but I contend that they were pre-cleared. The February 1st letter says that they are pre-cleared. The only thing different is the context, and by February the 16th, well within the 60-day period to lodge a conditional objection, they ratified their original pre-clearance. I don't think there can be any meaningful dispute. They understood on February
the 16th. Mr. Sanders, if there had been no December 20th, then do you agree that there would have had to have been a preclearance of what was agreed upon on February 10th to be the Mississippi system? Forget about it. There'd never been any December 20th submission. On February 10th, the state of Mississippi knows what it's going to do. Does that have to be precleared?
No, ma'am, I don't think it does. I think the fact the 60-day period just makes the case stronger, but I think it is beyond dispute that the Department of Justice knew that those statutory changes or that the law surrounding voter Mississippi registration qualification was embodied in state statutes, and that law could not be changed unless those statutes were changed.
I'm not talking about the state registration, just the federal registration.
Okay.
It's a change. It's something new. Forced by federal law, but still, it's a change in a voting practice. Doesn't that have to be pre-cleared? I thought that any change had to be pre-cleared.
Well, I think any state-initiated change has to be pre-cleared.
But the state is initiating a form that isn't dictated in every particular by Congress.
Well, it is largely dictated and almost exclusively dictated by the Federal Election Commission. That's what the NVRA requires the FEC to do. The state of Mississippi has very little input into the construction of that.
Then your answer to me now seems to me inconsistent with the position that you repeated twice in your brief when you said that the statute requires preclearance of any change and that arguably. Yes. But now you're changing the arguably to no.
No, I'm just saying, what I'm saying is arguably it did. If it did, we got the preclearance. Now, if we want to really examine the amount.
You're not conceding, are you, that the publication of a form is a change in practice or procedure?
No, not one that's initiated by the state and subject to Section 5 preclearance. No, I'm not.
So you're now taking the position the forms did not have to be pre-cleared?
No, my position hasn't changed. The fact that they were pre-cleared seemed to me.
Yes, but your argument that they were pre-cleared, if I understood you before Justice Ginsburg asked you some other questions, was that the February 16th letter, in effect, ratified the prior pre-clearance.
That's correct.
That's surely not a fair reading of that letter, which is asking, which is telling you in so many words there's been no pre-clearance.
All right. But Your Honor, the Attorney General has promulgated a regulation that carries out this part of the language of Section 5. Is 28 CFR Section 51.43. It expressly gives the Attorney General the authority to lodge a conditional objection. There's no way you can read the February 16th letter to lodge a conditional objection.
It says the review of this matter indicates that the implementation of this dual voter registration system and purge system has not been submitted for review.
That's correct, and they suggest that we make another submission, but they never do anything to diminish the fact that they pre-cleared those agency selections. They pre-cleared the form. There's
but
nothing.
It's part of a general submission that you say was improper and which was clearly not.
They were willing to take the bitter with the sweet. They would approve those provisions as part of a unitary system, but might not be willing to approve them as part of the divided system that you want to retain.
Well, my position is in their February 16th letter, all they had to do it was say, well, if this is not part of a unitary system, then we hereby lodge a conditional objection and we will resolve it later on. That's what their own regulation says they have the authority to do, and they do not do it. And
let me ask you a what-if question.
All right.
What if we don't agree with you and think this whole pre-clearance bubble mess doesn't amount to anything? It's a nullity. You're out and they're out. Nothing's pre-cleared. Now what do you have to do?
Well,
let's just suppose that's what we think.
All right. I certainly would not have to submit any notion that there has been a change in state law. Clearly there has not been. I would not have to submit any of the things that amount to base compliance that amount to implementation of the base requirements of the NVRA. Again, at most, I would have to submit those matters, the designation of agencies, the construction of the form, And the
and probably forms that make clear to people who register at driver's license time that they are not registered thereby for state and local elections.
Well, I think if this court were to remand, we might make that change. But I frankly, I do not think that that would be
might.
Well,
I said a moment ago.
No, I don't. I don't think that it amounts to enough, but certainly, I mean.
But in your brief, you said twice, the choice of NVRA forms those agencies would use were administrative changes affecting voting that arguably required Section 5 preclearance. And now, as I understand your answer to the Chief Justice, you're saying you were wrong to say arguably required preclearance because there weren't changes that needed preclearance.
Well, I don't.
You said it twice, so you must have thought about it.
Well, frankly, I mean, I didn't put as much.
I think it's an argument, but it's a bad argument.
That's correct. Thank you.
But didn't you also, in this argument just a moment ago, in responding to Justice O'Connor, refer to the need to submit something about the forms? You used the word form.
Right, the construction of the form, the state.
The construction of the form, by which you mean the format and its content?
Well, really, what
do you mean by construction?
As I indicated earlier, the NVRA says that persons may register.
Oh, may I interrupt you just for a second? Before you tell me that, what I just want to know what you meant by the words you used. You spoke of the construction of the forms. What do you mean by construction of the
forms? If the state of Mississippi had decided to put a lot of additional material on the form, then we would have been constructing in a material sense. If we had, I can't think of an example, but if we had put a great deal more material on there, all we actually put on there were those things that would disqualify someone. The NVRA form has a voter declaration section, and all the person needs to do is sign his name below this declaration, which says, I have not been convicted of these certain crimes, I'm over 18. In other words, it incorporates Mississippi's qualifications.
Okay.
Now, and so Mississippi put Mississippi's qualifications in there. I suppose Alabama put Alabama's qualifications in there. So that to that extent, it is somewhat different than the base form from the FEC.
So you agree that insofar as you include those, in effect, state law conditions and limitations, you must submit the form for preclearance?
I say that that arguably if I don't know whether just filling out that part and putting our state qualifications is enough. Frankly, I don't think it is. I'm just saying arguably it could be, but I think clearly if we went further than that, if we put other material in there, the more we put into it.
Or if you omitted material, for example, if you omitted a statement calling attention to the fact that under Mississippi law, this registration would be good for federal elections only. That omission, as I understand it, would not be something that would require submission for preclearance.
Well, I'm not sure that not putting something in there amounts to a Section 5 change.
Well, you say you're not sure. I thought your position was going to be that you were sure and it was not a Section 5 change and you didn't have to submit it.
Well, all right. I'll state it in the affirmative. I don't think that not putting that is a Section 5 change. You're correct.
Okay.
What should we do? If we think, well, you haven't submitted I see about 20 pages here in this statute. It has a lot of different procedural requirements, and maybe some are absolutely mandatory, and maybe some give you discretion. If we send it back and say you have to pre-clear those, mm-hmm. would there be a lot of argument about what you have to pre-clear or not? I mean, what would you suggest we do? I imagine what would happen is you'd have to pre-clear those, and they'd come in and argue that in light of the dual system, you have to do something that's virtually impossible. So I don't know what they're going to argue, but they're going to argue that that dual system is highly relevant. And you'll argue it isn't, all right? And so what in your opinion, if we, just what Justice O'Connor asked, I think, what is your opinion if we disagree with you that it has been cleared? We think it hasn't been cleared yet. What should we do?
Well, I think, and most, of course, should just simply remand it. I do not think that this court should in any way render a decision on without going back to the district court. But I think still, to the extent that that anyone considers that a change has been made, I think that is still something that the Section 5, the district court, should have an opportunity to look at if the court feels that more More proof should be developed and so forth through discovery. I mean, that can be done, but at the very most that this court should do is remand to the district court, if that's what your question is.
I look at the assistance part. There seems some words here about they're having to provide appropriate assistance. You're having to people. That was the part that seemed the most discretionary when I just glanced at it, but that hasn't been argued fully here.
No, that's correct, Your Honor.
Mr. Sanders, I'm reluctant, as some others seem to be, to say that you have to submit forms for preclearance, because if we adopt that principle, we'll have to use it not just in this case, but in all cases in the future. And the notion that all forms are submittable whenever you make any change is a rather expansive one. On the other hand, I'm also concerned that the Justice Department ought to be able to protect Mississippi voters from being misled when they register under what is a federal-only system into believing that they're registered under state law, and then they appear at the state voting place and they find that they can't vote.
And Your Honor,
if we can't be sure by requiring the forms to be submitted, how can the Attorney General prevent the state of Mississippi from misleading citizens that way?
Well, obviously through a Section 2 challenge or any 15th Amendment-based challenge, but our position is that the Attorney General should not be able to do that through the device of Section 5 preclearance. Again, we do not think that the Attorney General should be able to review, object, or veto any mandate to the state of Mississippi from the Congress. But they have plenty of other options available to it. To the extent, as my good friend Mr. Stewart said, that base implementation of the NVRA might amount to a discriminatory purpose. If it does, then the United States may challenge that in a variety of other ways, but not through the device of preclearance.
Is there any significance to the fact that the motor vehicle statute has a specific section in it saying that this doesn't limit the application of the Voting Rights Act and doesn't modify it in any way? And doesn't it follow that if you adopt a new form to be used to register voters, that that's a change or practice, blah, 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 within the meaning of Section 5?
I read that language in the NVRA simply to mean the same, the same way I read footnote 29 in Allen, where this court says that state-initiated changes, even when made to comply with Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, must be submitted for preclearance. I read that language in the NVRA the same way. When the state makes changes itself, they must be submitted for preclearance, even though they are part of an NVRA.
The fact that the federal statute required them to do some things that made them print a new form that they use with respect to election, is it not still true that the distribution of a new form to people who are being registered, a form you never used before, is a change in a voting practice?
Not within the meaning of Section 5.
You don't think
no,
so?
No. I don't think that language in the NVRA was designed to give the Attorney General the right of veto over an act of Congress, over a mandate from the Congress.
Well, without reference to the NVRA, the state of Mississippi decided to have a new form advising voters of the effect of their registration, where they could register and so forth. Would that have to be pre-cleared?
It's an
instruction mailed to all voters with respect to an explanation of registration procedures. You do not have to preclear that?
Absolutely not. I mean, there's nothing new about circuit clerks or secretary of states or any elected officials.
Suppose it's a new form, new wording, et cetera.
It doesn't matter, Your Honor. If it's just designed to convey information to the electorate, no, that's not a change in any sense.
This is not a voting practice or procedure?
No, of course not. It has nothing to do with a person's ability to vote. It simply is, if we're trying to inform them of their status, that does not represent a change for Section 5 purposes or for any other purposes, so far as I can see. That is simply, I mean, all elected officials from all, you know, have always done what they can to help people, and help their constituents. That's just currying favor with voters, and that does not represent a Section 5 change. If there are no other questions, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sanders, the case is submitted.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until tomorrow at 10 o'clock.